All right, top item, most urgent item for tonight, timely discussion of Andrew Owens. And, you know, lots of positive, and I think, I don't remember if Kaylin's email mentions, you know, hey, get back to us in a week. I think she said in there, they could email us, respond to this form, and that we meet again in a week, you know, tonight and in a week. So kind of implies, hey, get back to us now. So that's good. I'm glad that went out.
And if so you think it's needed, she's going to put it out Wednesday again, and she could add that blurb in the Wednesday email.
Yeah. Because we meet again, you know, again, a week from tonight, and I thought, well, let's be able to finalize the decision by then, and, you know, we might be able to tonight, but got lots of feedback, lots of positive folks have shared. Does anybody have any negative feedback from anybody that we can dissect a little bit?
Who was the email from?
Brad.
Give me a second.
Well, Eric said he had some qualms.
And then Mike's wife.
Denise.
Denise, yeah.
Not impressed, I think, is the line.
Jim's wife.
Jim, yeah.
Sue told me that Becky was he was okay, but that was it. Jeff was saying, go ahead and hire him.
I thought Jeff's feedback, I think you also shared, he thought it'd be kind of divisive to bring in a second person if we're not really sold on that. And so we'll talk about Devin here in a little bit and weigh those elements. But just in terms of how Andrew did, I thought he had a good weekend.
Yeah.
Were any of us there Saturday with the ministry leaders?
Yeah,
it was good. So I think he handled the room well, which we've had struggles, I think, every time. So this is the first time that anybody's really handled it well. You know, like, either a question will throw them off, or the answers were bad, or just, and that was for everybody, I think, we've had so far, where I didn't feel that on any of them, which was just strange. I mean, I did not expect that from our conversation here, for him to handle the room that well.
And to that, I noticed the same, probably more so, in his Sunday class. You know, you get a lot of feedback, and some of it is like, that question's out of left field. But he was just real sharp to respond. And
well, and you need to know that the very beginning of that class, we didn't have his PowerPoint.
Okay.
So Kaylin didn't get that loaded, just or he got somewhere. And so he was just going from what he knew was on that PowerPoint and starting the class. So if you guys watch me bring up the iPad, at that point it was ready for him. Yeah. It wasn't ready until that point. So that was almost 3 to 4 minutes into his thing as we were getting ready.
So he was good on his feet. And I think part of it is just dealing with adolescence. You know, you just never what they're going to talk to you. And so he just fielded questions well. And so I just thought, and I was very happy he just showed a lot of wisdom and maturity in those situations.
What I felt was just a real sense of honesty. I mean, he wasn't trying to give the right answer. He was trying to give really truly what he thought, you know. And I think that was that's good. I get a little, you know, crazy when people are just giving the
textbook
answer, or kind of what they think they want to hear.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that. That was something that I hadn't really picked up, or didn't have an opportunity to pick up on before, but both in his sermon and his class, I think he did a good job.
I liked he was transparent, had like examples from his own life in the class and the sermon, and that's good. I do brought up being challenged by pornography. That's pretty bold.
When I listened to it, I was like, oh my goodness.
He said that.
Very appropriate with the topic and everything he was talking about. And so I thought that says a lot.
I sat next to Bartowell's in class. And right after class, I just said, well, you know what you guys think? And they both were very positive.
Yeah.
So
after his answers on Saturday night, I could guarantee that they both would have liked him, just because of the way that he handled Matthew's questions. Mm-hmm. He was just, because he didn't shy away from them. So Matthew's first question was very simple, simplistic.
Zero to softball.
That's exactly what it was. And then he even said something similar like that. And then he's like, but I have another one. And so he passed the microphone off. And then it came back and he asked the question. And he hit a home run with that one too.
Okay.
So at that point, I could see Matthew, because I was sitting in the front, so I could see Matthew's response. And it's like, I can read Matthew pretty well. He's happy with both of the answers. And
good. So, full speed ahead here. It did occur to me. I'm not sure where we were with actually checking references, talking to the elders where he's at or anything, and what's appropriate there to kind of.
My understanding was Steve Autry knew some of the references and was going to be following up on those, and Steve Walker was going to start the background check. Now, both of those guys are busy. I don't know if they got it started or not, but that's my understanding what they were going
to
do.
And the thing with the background check is that he has to submit it to Andrew, and Andrew has to fill it out through the company that we have. So that, it's sort of a bit different. So have we sent the MOU to him? We have sent that, the complete one. So I think he'll be fine with that, but he'll have to have at least a little more information, or like, hey, we're somewhat serious or something at this point, before we give you the final kind of thing.
Okay.
And he just wasn't available tonight, right? He's at the game or something, isn't he?
Steve Walker's at the game tonight.
So I can talk to him tomorrow about that and make sure that if we don't put in an email or something to him tonight.
Okay. And I think what Dave Weiler said last time, I think is important, and I liked it, is what do we as elders recommend? You know, because we're going to get feedback from the congregation. We need to listen to that, but, you know, that shouldn't compel us to act in a certain way. And so I'm hoping when we leave here tonight, we say, unless, you know, something comes up in a background check, we are strongly going to go this way, or unless somebody, one of these reference or some feedback we get, you know, is just something is going to stop things. But so that's my hope, is that we come to what you had asked for last time and
get to that point. My gut is, let's hire him. I mean, I just have a very strong feeling that this is an answered prayer.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm positive to go forward with Andrew.
Yeah, so originally, when Nathan just mentioned it, I was like, I don't think so. But after the interview here, I think I felt much better. And then after yesterday, there was no quick lead. And even on Saturday, at that point, I was like, does he really even need to preach? Because he's won over this whole room. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's the ministry leaders at that point, which has not happened. So I'm definitely on that side.
And I guess I'm kind of with Jeff. On paper, I thought he was like a C+. It's like, yeah, let's bring him in. But I just really am impressed with, you know, how genuine he is. And I think he's somebody that will fit in well. And I think he's, you know, moldable and trainable. And I just, so yeah, I think I want to progress with him with as much speed as we can manage.
Same, Don.
Same.
Steve Autry was chatting with us yesterday and said he was previously kind of neutral. He knew Andrew, but he felt like it was a really good weekend, and he was a plus.
Yeah.
And then Steve Walker, I don't think I've seen anything formal from him. I didn't talk to him yesterday.
He filled out a survey, and on a survey, he was all positive. I mean, he said he needs to be, you know, he's going to be weak on ministry. We know that, but he can grow into that. And so he was positive on it. And I guess the one thing I could say on the sermon is I would guess that this is his best sermon. You know, this is one that, you know, because he's had time to work on it over the past 2 years. He said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And so, you know, if he ever starts preaching again, you know, it's going to go downhill, but I still think he's going to do well.
Yeah. Well, he did, and he has preached more than some of the other guys we've had in here. I mean, just because he's been more of an associate minister than he's been a just a youth minister.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I watched the one that is in your link.
Right.
And so that seemed fine.
Yeah. Yeah, but still inexperienced.
Right, right.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping that we're going to be positive, and although I like to do things formally, you know, my thought is, you know, we get the feedback from the congregation in a week from now, at least two of the elders meet with him. And, you know, this isn't something to email or get him a call. It's like, we want to talk with you, pray with him and say, we feel you're being called to this. And, you know, we want you and your wife to pray about it, but, you know, we'd like to make this work. And I think, you know, I like paperwork, but I think something like that should happen.
Yeah, that's what we did with Ethan back the very first time.
Yeah.
He was here. And we made him the offer. Okay. And he turned down.
Yeah.
And so, Devin's, let's talk about him a little bit. You know, had another Zoom interview, and I don't think there was any, my read was there wasn't anything there that's going to outweigh what Andrew brings. Is there a value to have another follow-up interview weekend, next weekend, give Devin even more of a chance? Kreider pointed out that could be divisive for, you know, what reason if we think we have the guy. And I think Nathan used the same language in the email he sent today with his feedback was, you know, we don't need to go there. Yeah. So I would agree with that assessment. You guys feel the same way about Devin's got lots of pluses, but.
Yeah, he does. And I think, and self-admittedly, you know, he said, you know, I was kind of surprised you guys were even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't really have any experience and kind of got some schooling left to go. And,
yeah.
And I think, yeah, I think if we went through that motion, we'd probably have a good portion of the people that would like him.
Yeah.
And would be in the same situation we were before. And I really think that Andrew is a much better investment. And not to totally push Devin aside, you know, he's going to be here for a year or two in schooling, and maybe there is something that, as we talked about, maybe that may work out, you know, here for him, even part-time while he's in school or something, to do the small groups or.
And that's what I had heard at the end, and I like that, is to not say no to Devin, to say, you know, the lead minister, you know, that doesn't seem a good fit, but we want you to pray and think about this. You know, this is something that we're thinking about is, you know, there's a lot of work we need to do. We've got, you know, maybe part-time you could help us with family ministries, children's ministries, or whatever. But that's kind of what I thought we were thinking is, hey, yeah, the senior minister, you know, that's not going to work out. But we really think that you
right
can
now
fit in. Yeah. Yes.
But I really liked him. He's got a lot of.
Yeah. Devin's got lots of plus, lots of upside. Not ready for this opening, but.
Right.
So then my mind was racing about different ways to utilize him here. It's an interesting, lots of interesting scenarios because they are moving to St. Louis. They're moving into our rental house temporarily while they look for a place to buy. So might be 1 month, it might be 11. But they'll just be month to month there. I get the impression that they would like to attend McKnight while they're here, unless he's looking for ministry jobs while they're here working on his MDiv and she's a teacher. And so I don't know if we just let that play out, and while they're here as members, he might love to do small groups, or
say,
do we need to go
to
a paid
place? Dale Simpson,
yeah, Dale
just
Simpson
as a member.
I'm sorry, what?
Could we plug him in to replace Dale Simpson for the small groups just as a member?
Right.
And just
and
see if he has an interest in it. And, you know.
Right. Or the scenario like, well, you know, children's ministry is kind of this part-time thing. I don't think that's what's on his heart, but family and get involvement ministers, small
yeah
groups.
And that gets into the other thing that we had talked about even before Jeff left, the idea of an involvement minister
right
as being one of those key pieces that we don't really have that.
Right, and so we do we have a part-time thing there, or find out, do we need to pay him to keep him versus, okay, we get him for 2 months and then he takes a job at the Rooftop or the Journey or something, and we lose them both.
Right, that's what I'm thinking is, I don't have a problem if he comes on part-time. I think it'd be good. And I don't even have a problem, you know, I don't know how long Jeff's going to do Children's, to ask him to do Children's, even though that's not what he's looking to do.
I'd be careful with offering him something that's not what he likes. I'd have to go back and listen to the interview, because he actually threw out three things, I think, that he was... I'm just not interested in these things.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that's
right. Right. And I'm not, it may not go that way. I'm just saying I would do it. And yeah. You're right. It may not go well, but I would still, you know, if that's what we need, you know, hey, we've got these openings. But I would say, in addition to whatever our need is, children's ministry, you know, we need worship ministry, family ministry, small group ministry. And, but I think we'd have to work through that. And I think it would be worth paying him for part-time on that instead of trying to lose him to somebody else.
I almost feel like, though, that we really need to focus on Andrew, you know, and trying to juggle both of those at the same time. I don't want to jeopardize one. So I would suggest that we just proceed with Andrew. Hopefully within the next 30 days, you know, he'll hopefully have accepted an offer, we'll have a start date, you know, we can start kind of transitioning towards that. And then as Devin and Carly's position here evolves, we'll see if they're interested in attending here, and hopefully they are. And just kind of let that simmer until we are in a little more solid position with Andrew and moving forward, and then assess, you know, and if that's what we need, and I think as we continue to pray that, you know, I think it'll happen, you know. And
I think there's wisdom in that. That sounds good.
I just hate to see us trying to juggle too
much.
Many, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I also wouldn't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. You know, we talked to Devin and things just kind of work out that way. I wouldn't want to slow that down if it keeps moving that way. Yeah. But I think, yeah, we need to give Andrew our attention. And I think, and I've said it before, I think us having an understanding of what we want the first 6 months is important. That we, you know, I think the first 6 months we structure that, or we are aware pretty close to what it is, and then, you know, kind of loosen it up. But I think as elders, we need to understand what that first 6 months is going to look like.
I think if we did try to juggle it both, it may send the wrong message to Andrew too. You know, that maybe it'd be better to work for 60 days, getting him sort of engaged and everywhere, and then sit down and say, "Look, Andrew, here's some opportunities we think we have. What's your impression?" Or, you know,
because I think that Devin's going to come in here. My assumption. So I didn't talk to him about it yesterday. But my guess is that he's going to work for one of the church's neighbors and cutting grass, because that's what he's doing right now. Mm-hmm. He's doing part-time cutting grass, part-time working at the church. His father-in-law owns a company that still cuts grass because he can't let go of it after retiring last year. But my guess is that him and DeMarco will be out here cutting the church's grass and everybody else's grass instead of Steve. And that would be my guess for the first through the rest of the summer, once they actually put their feet here in St. Louis. And he'll be looking for a job possibly, but most likely that's what he'll be doing, just because that's what he knows.
And he may want to give school a little time to get.
Correct. Yeah. Because right now in the summer, I don't think he's doing school. I think it'll only start back up in the fall. And so.
Yeah, their ability to buy a house. I mean, she's got a good position already, but yes. I don't know how dependent that is on whatever he finds quickly, or I don't know how that's going to play out.
I'm just thinking that, like this other couple I was talking about, you know, married, no kids, and I'd look around and go, who else is like that, you know? We really have, that's, you know, so if he and Carly could start a new group and, you know, and just let's see how things fly from there, you know, give them a title or, you know, a job at, I wouldn't rush to say let's employ him yet.
Maybe that spark that we need.
Yeah.
I like his thought about there's a lot with Andrew getting off on the right foot and not,
He needs to be the central point right now. And we start bringing in other people immediately, I think it's going to complicate things.
Yeah.
Not to mention the budget is going to be an issue.
Yeah, I've got that on here too.
So. Money.
Yeah.
We can just sell one of the houses. Both of them.
So, all right. Thank you, guys. Recap of the VBS, Children's Ministry update. They're traveling, and so just thought you could.
Yeah, quick rundown. So, 70 or so kids that attended at some point during the time, with around 58 to 65, I think, each day. So, very positive. And like I said in front of the congregation, of the 70 kids, 40 of them, I think 40, 42 of them, I guess, because it was 28 were member related, 42 were non-members. Some of them were repeats, in that we've had them every summer for the last several summers, but there was a group of probably 15 that were brand new. And we don't know how they found out about it, but they all came in, and they were all...
Were you able to get data from any of those people?
So we know, we have addresses and things like that, and we know that, and Chris knows, I think, a little bit more, and Chris and Joyce both had several conversations with each of the families. But, so they're... We don't know. I don't know.
Like some knew each other. I
mean, yes, so they're related. So, and then they know some of the others. So one of them, the two bigger groups were two families, and they the wives are sisters, and so they just have a bunch of kids, and I think they know the other two, so they may all go to the same church, but that's the pieces I don't know yet. I'll have to do some debriefing with some of my other people that were talking with them a lot more, but. But yeah, so they were very involved because they came early, stuck around through the opening ceremony, then they all left. One of the days they stayed there, and they came back for the closing ceremony usually too, just to see what was going on. And so definitely really positive. And so not really any major negatives. So
all I heard was how hard you worked.
Some of us work hard. Like everybody sitting around this table.
Fits into that bucket. How do I get my stuff back?
It's downstairs waiting for you.
You're going to just keep
going. Well, there's bonus stuff. You can take more.
You need a tree. You need three trees. You need... I picked up, I think, 6 or 7 from Facebook Marketplace. So we have a lot of extra trees.
Okay.
A lot of the things that are not people's are getting shipped over to the Korean church. So, like, if you remember the retreat, I went down and met the guy. And so... So he's definitely interested. And so I sent him our video of Ethan's drone flying around and let him see that. And he's like, oh, wow, this is just great. Give us some good ideas for what we could do. Because a lot of the stuff they won't get, but it's stuff that it's hard to conceptualize when you just see things sitting in a room. And so that it was all built out, it sort of helped out some. But yeah, definitely really positive. So he'll be back. Nathan will take it first to Nashville, some of the stuff, and then bring it back, and then he'll come over and pick it up, or we'll bring it over to him, depending on how we can get it there.
Sure.
So definitely a good relationship we're building with them, too. So
thank you for all your hard work.
Yes. Yes.
It was great.
Great.
One of those gifts that I have.
A good reward, just being
in
heaven.
Yeah. You had to wait a little while, but hey. Yeah, other than that, things are going okay. We still are struggling with teachers. Because there's been lots of people that have retired or that have stopped doing it or sick and things like that. So just all these things that I think I have most of it covered through July. So we'll be the transition now to like the switching kids out. So that happened this last weekend. So so the classes were much calmer, which is nice. Eric even told me, he's like, this was the calmest class I've had in 10 years. As the four fifth graders that have wreaked havoc for now, I don't know how many years, have all moved up to the youth group. So next time Nathan's in here, he will not say the same thing. This has been the wildest time I've had in youth group ever. But so that's made, I think it's going to make it a little bit easier moving forward with the big group as well as with the smaller classrooms that we were having issues with.
Having four more kids coming in helps too, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and you just have different ones. And so it makes it, that's been the best part, I think, that it's time for them. They grew up, most of them, or half of them, in the preschool. So they know the building like the back of their hand, probably better than all of us. And they know how to run the building just as much as we do. So, and that's really hard teaching kids like that. And so, and keeping them involved, and they just get very antsy. And so, but so I think it's going well. So everything's planned out generally right now. So I just need to get emails set up to automatically send out while I'm gone. And then other than that, we'll leave Monday morning.
Right now. This is just a random thought that made me think of kids. Who's the kid in the back who keeps yelling all the time during the service?
Probably Angela.
Jaden, the teenager?
No.
No, I thought Angela. So Michael's, probably Michael's, Michael's daughter's sister.
Yeah.
So that's now living. So basically, Michael has his, I don't know, four kids. So the two twins, Zach and Zariah, with Whitney. So those are Whitney's kids. Michael has one other daughter, Trinity.
Aiden.
No, Trinity is his other daughter, the first daughter.
Okay.
So she's older than Zach. And then from a previous relationship. And then he has Aiden, who is sort of younger than Zariah, I think. Just, yeah, right around that time frame. And she has two sisters. They are all now currently living with Michael and Whitney. I don't know what he never told me what happened and why they ended up with them. He never knew about her to begin with, I think.
Yeah.
And then the mom told him, and then he ended up with all three.
Yeah.
So
the mother. So only one of the girls is related to Michael. So she's got three daughters. She's between houses and has, you know, knows Michael and Whitney, you know, as friends and stuff. And so has asked at times for the girls to stay, typically on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
But that's spilling into more and more. So basically they're living at the house while mom floats a bit and looks for another place. And that just keeps stretching longer and longer. And so I am tuned into that because I'm picking them up, and Michael's been very, you know, open about where things are, and I've encouraged him that it's really weighing on Whitney having such a houseful, because it isn't just those three girls. They're very open with our household. I think they've had to have help and stay with people over times, and so when family and friends come to them and need a place to stay, they're real open about that, and so you can appreciate the heart for that, but Whitney's really drained.
I mean,
two twins,
and then
that household on top of it is very chaotic, so I've told Michael, I thought, man, these really need to be temporary arrangements, and you can see what it's doing to Whitney, and encourage them, and he's,
And so Angela is the one that's very loud.
Yeah, so
she's been, we've had several conversations with her about situations. So on the first Sunday of VBS, we were lucky Max didn't just quit being a group leader, and because she took off and she ran around, did this and that, and Michael wasn't planning to bring her back. So she didn't come the two middle days. She did come on the third day.
Yeah. Day two, she was ill. So day three, I refused to bring her because she hadn't been fever-free for 24 hours. She came back day four. So that was part of it.
Well, Michael had said that he wasn't bringing her back, though, too. So on Sunday night, because it was just such a... It was the only thing of all of VBS that was a concern. Because it was her. Yeah, it was her. And Which is good to a point if it's only one person and everything else goes really flows nicely. But so that's what was going on Sunday too, that she's very loud and she doesn't know, have a quiet voice, I don't think. But she was okay in class and she was okay in children's worship, which was really surprising. And it may be the fifth graders not being there making enough noise to where she can feel, hey, that's okay. And so this time Eric was saying she was disturbing at times, or disturbed the room at times, but most of the time she was generally paying attention.
That's a really long answer to your very short question.
Yes, sorry. Well,
just because several times it was so loud that it was actually couldn't hear.
Correct.
And I thought, you know, I was hoping somebody would say, well, let's, you know, take them outside or do something to, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be... Don't bring the children either.
I was curious
who it was because I couldn't.
As the children's minister standing right next to it and trying to hush them multiple times, yeah. And Brian having to hush them before whenever I wasn't in there, it's just like I don't know how to. Because in reality, normally if Whitney would have been where she normally is at, up in the front, it would have been all the way up in the front, all that noise. And so that's, I'm not sure which is the better option. And how to.
When do you come back from your trip?
So we leave on the 15th or the 16th. So the 15th is Sunday. So we'll be here Sunday. We drive out to Chicago Monday early morning, and then we'll come back on the 2nd, so July 2nd. And we'll drive back that night, evening. Okay.
So. Well, that's a good trip. So you feel like things are okay?
Walker is going to make sure everything is cleaned up to a point, and then Kaylin is to a point on any staffing related kinds of things if somebody, because she has access to, and I'll be keeping watch on it too. I mean, I don't stop working. The good thing is Edward Jones will not let me work, so there's an escape plan if somebody. If one of two people call me, I can answer the phone. And so I'm like, okay, whatever. It's just. Okay.
And so you were, my memory is you were good with the children's ministry thing through the summer.
Yeah.
And then kind of reevaluate.
Yeah, definitely.
And then that's when we'll talk more about elder, you know, kind of joining that and such then too. That's my memory. So
yeah.
It still works for you. Okay. Thank you. Kind of related to that, I put the next item on purpose because when we had our last finance committee meeting, the admin elders, I kind of brought up the status of our contributions is pretty weak for the first half of the year. And so that brings into question this opening for the children's ministry position as a full-time. And should we be recruiting now? And we talked about waiting, the value of waiting until the lead is in place. And so just wanted to reaffirm that for sure. But then I don't know how heavily we weigh. We can't keep dumping on you. I completely get that. And we want to invest in that next generation. And so the whole Jeremiah thing, and then, so I don't know what we do with that in terms of, well, let's plow ahead and in faith God's going to provide. And I see the value in that. I just don't want to naively move that direction. I want eyes wide open. And is that our deliberate decision with prayer? Or are we prompted to do things another way? And I don't know for sure what that might be, but, you know, that's been a volunteer ministry. And there have been very gifted people in the church's history, and they're not here, and I don't know who is, and all of that. So I wanted us to talk about that a little bit, or anything else that is a concern related to the contributions. We really don't bring a monthly financial statement to this meeting. We're hovering break even with low contributions because of low expenses. We've got two full-time positions that are budgeted and no expense benefits or anything through half of the year here. And so that's creating a wash. Well, those two full-time positions are with benefits and everything, 140 grand range, you know, something close to that. And so that's quite a commitment beyond our current giving level. And we're going to make a commitment here of 100,000 of that. Actually, it must be more than 140 if 100 is in the one position once we put benefits on that. So, because that MOU, I think, came up to 98 grand or something.
We were probably thinking 140 additional, but we're currently, that would decrease by that whatever we're paying Jeff. So that would be the 40 plus very whatever he has is, I don't know what that would be. It's probably where your mind was.
Yep. So, you know.
So again, I think we're in a good place right now as far as the lead minister. I think kind of holding off until we get the lead minister on and sort of operating. Then we sit down again later this summer and say, okay, now we've got that sort of in place. I mean, I don't want to walk away from the children's ministry either. But then maybe we look at it and say, okay, let's mid-year, let's do another budget, you know, and just kind of see what we've got to take. And then if we do this, this, and this, then here's what it's going to take a week. Here's how short we are. I think we go to the congregation and say, look, you know, here's what we need to do to be able to do these things and approach it that way, you know, not, again, just one step at a time. I think it's just so important that this transition for Andrew to really kind of get his feet under him and sit down with us and kind of talk about, we can give him the history of where we've been and what we've tried and what we've done, and then
scare him too much.
And then come up with a plan to go forward. But
yeah, Steve Walker, I think it's Steve Walker and I were talking about this a little bit. And it's one of those things that if we feel it's needed, like you're saying, Don, that there needs to be a full-time children's minister and we don't have the money, then just like Andrew's saying, stepping out onto that, the emptiness, we have to go to the church and say, this is the fact. We think and believe that we need to have this, but we don't have the money. So we're going to tell you that this is what we're going to do. We're moving with this ministry, and if we feel that if the contributions change and we see a response in the next month or 2 months, then we continue on that path. We can go talk to people at Harding. We have people that we can chat with. But
John and Angie Earnhardt were in the auditorium when we were talking to Next Gen, and he was like, okay, we're going to do this, and we're going to put the money in that's needed, and, you know, it was great. But, of course, then their kids left, you know.
Yeah.
But we need somebody to step up. And
yeah.
I think we need to challenge the congregation and, you know,
I also had a thought, too, and you guys may totally disagree, but we have never historically, as an eldership, looked at the contribution at a detail level as to who gives what or whatever, and I think for very good reasons. But I also think it would be probably beneficial from the standpoint to know, I think to know where our contribution today comes from. I think we would find that it's a very small number people, and there's a very large number of people that maybe aren't giving anything, you know, and that's pretty indicative of, I think, an issue. So I'm feeling less and less bad about not doing it to be nosy or anything like that, but as leaders of this congregation to know, I couldn't tell you right now if 80% of our congregation, if 80% of our budget is coming from six families, then we're in a serious position, because another quarter leave, I don't know what kind of impact that's going to have. I mean, that's going to be, could be pretty significant, you know. But to know that, to have that kind of knowledge, to know when something like this happens, when the quarters leave, we got to do something, you know.
Yeah, Earnhardt did that years ago, and was convicted to approach a few people. He was close enough and realized, I think that gave me a lot of comfort. We don't need to, and I like not looking at people and labeling them, knowing what they're given.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a right way to do that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying
we
all
should
of
be
us.
Able to find it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't think it has to be all of it. It could be just you, Dave. I mean, just somebody that
thinks
that.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at with what
well,
our
yeah.
did. It was valuable and painted a picture, and he gave us a high level at that time.
So he or you or whoever did, could come to us and say, look, guys, this is a little different.
Right.
We've got a little different situation here. You know,
right.
We just suddenly lost 10% of our
something like
weekly
that.
Giving or something,
yeah.
You know. And so it's not something we all have to know, but I think it would be
great
for one of us to know that.
Well, my guess is it's probably an 80-20 situation where about 20% of the church is paying most of it.
I'm fairly confident.
80% of the people are,
yeah.
You know, sitting there doing, here's 20 bucks, we'll throw in if you're lucky. And, yeah.
I think it's important how it's framed as well, and I think right now we're in a good place. And so, connected with children's minister, you know, children's ministry, that's ambiguous, you know. But if you got somebody like a Devin, okay, you can rally around somebody. So like right now we've got Andrew, right? So it's different when you got to pay money because a tree fell on your house and you got to come up with money. But it's different if you're trying to put a swimming pool in the backyard. And you know, I think that's what we're trying to do now. It's like, listen. This is a good thing. We don't need the money to hedge up from bad things. You know, we got good things happening. You know, we got Andrew coming in. Here's what we want to do. We've got vision and opportunity. And, you know, this is the time to say, yeah, we want to support this. And, you know, again, you frame it in the positive instead of saying, yeah, you know, we're blowing through our money and we need it, or we got to close the doors kind of a thing.
Fred was Catholic. The big one down south, but anyway, the priests come around once a year with the cards,
yeah.
And they go to every family and they say, what are you going to give this year? And I used to say, oh, isn't that terrible? But now I've really rethought that figure. So, you know, you go down and sit down in their living room and ask that question, and some people will probably, you know, resent it, but you know,
but they know it happens, and so they then expect it next year.
Yeah. I know a lot of churches will, for membership, you know, here's what we believe in, and one of those things is tithing. You know, we expect members to tithe. And
to hear Andrew say tithing in his message.
Right. And so I don't think that's inappropriate. So, but again, again, thinking about this time, you know, I keep emailing Jason Vincent and a few other people just saying, hey, you know, I hope you guys are still looking, but I want you to let you know what, you know, things are going on here, and you know, really hope you're, you know, step back in and, you know, kind of see what's going on, you know. And, you know, I told them we're looking at people, and you know, Andrew looks positive, but what I hope is we get somebody hired, and it's like, you know, here's what's going on, you know, so I can start circling back with people to say, here's what we're trying to do, and, you know, I feel good about it, and, you know, come back.
Tell people all the time, the porch light's always on.
Yeah.
You know? And, I think praying is probably the best thing we have right now to do, is to ask God to say, send us workers and people who want to work. And I'd like to think that, I don't know, go way back to crazy times when we lived in. We didn't have a nice place to sit in an air-conditioned room, but we used to go out to a house on Ballas Road, and there would be 120 kids who would go into that house and tear it apart. But it was a Bible study for a couple hours, and, you know, as we said, I think it's a God thing. more than anything else. Yeah.
I agree, but I don't like that, the way it's phrased. I don't like, the first thought should be, are you ready to work? You know, I agree with the sentiment, but I just think that falls flat with people. You know, that it should come in the discussions at some point, but I don't know that that should be one of the first discussions.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. Yes, I understand what you're saying, but yeah. I'm saying we've got members who've been here for 40 years right. who don't contribute.
Yeah, it's time for them to step up.
Yeah. But I really think we need new wineskins at the same time.
Yeah.
So,
amen.
Yeah, one of the things that I've been telling a lot of people, trying to comfort, is, and you guys, Brett, I think I've mentioned it to you, but the idea of a donkey with the straw on his back, and you put something on there and it just falls off at some point. And that's that situation when people leave. So with Collins and with Jason and all of them, it's hard to get that straw back on his back, all of it. Because the fact is they're not coming back with an empty back. They're going to have whatever they have on there sort of taped back on there and whatever else. And it doesn't have to be logical things. So, I mean, that's like with both Collins and with Jason and with somebody else. I don't remember who it was. But there's was things about Jeff, his sermons that he preached, the things that this. It's like he's not the minister here anymore. It's not. He's not really running the things anymore. But the thing is, it's not. And even like the children's ministry was one of the things for Collins and his family. But the fact is, they don't even understand the children's ministry to make the critique that they made.
Yeah.
And they don't even stay for the children's ministry, really. Yeah. So it's like they're, it's not logical things that fall off, usually, or that cause the fall off. And the problem is that it's so hard to get those people to come back. You can get them as visitors. You can get them as people to stop in, but you're not because of friendships.
Right.
But not for people usually to stay around. Yeah. And it's because they want to put all their hay back on there. We're coming back for this one time, and if something else gets on here, it's going to fall back off. And that's where it's logic doesn't really work in that. And it's a bad church methodology that we have. And I think we do that with political parties. We do that with lots of things that were or jobs. If it happens one more time, I'm out of here. And it's not a good where the Catholic Church. So just to give ploy or plug to them, I guess, is that they say, this is the church that you have to go to right here. You can't go to the other one unless you move over there.
Yeah, because the parish.
Because of the parish scenario. It's rare that you'll find anybody that'll escape their parish. And that's why the priest can come around to your house and say, Dave, how much are you going to give? Because you live in his parish. For you to have to move to go somewhere else, it's going to cost you money, and you'll give him money over moving somewhere else. And so,
yeah.
And so that's a struggle.
That's all changing for them.
Yeah.
My dad, when I visit, they have fewer priests, so they move them around. And, you know, a priest being there for 30 years was a part of that model, too, and all those relationships and things. And,
they're shrinking, growing parishes.
Yeah, so they're combining now. Close this school so that make one full one instead of two half full ones and stuff. But anyway. All right.
So for Andrew, we expect the congregation to give feedback in a week. At that time, so right now we are fully behind Andrew. And once we get the feedback, we plan to move forward, and at least a couple of levels will meet with him personally to tell him we feel he's called to be here. And then we'll be ready to act quickly with, I think he's got an MOU, and I don't know what he needs, but we got the background checks we got to do on that. And so we're hoping to get a quick turnaround. You know, we don't know when he's going to be able to do that, but we need to understand when that's going to be.
He probably won't want to start maybe till the fall or till he's through his summer activities with his youth group. Or
right, something. And then you brought up, though, that for the kids, they may want to move before school. So we'll just leave it up to him. Yeah. And like Steve said, you know, you can take off a month. I don't know financially how you'd ever swing that. But, you know, you give him options, but I wouldn't force him. Just, you know, we'd want him here as quick as he can, but within – whatever works with him.
Yeah, my conversations with him is that he probably would not move short term. that it would be a while before he would actually move, is my mm-hmm. understanding. And then it would be sort of that halfway in between so that his wife could get back. So you had 15 minutes as opposed to 30 minutes.
For a while.
Yeah, so probably on the north side, Florissant probably, or something like that is where my guess.
And right.
Money-wise, that's a better location if you're trying to find a place than
so here. We're going to focus on Andrew, make that a priority, and kind of wait on anything with Devin or the children's minister, unless, you know, God throws something in our lap. So with Devin, I think what we expect, I guess, is for Steve to say, you're a great guy. You know, for lead minister, it's not going to work, but, you know, not to say that something may not work later on part-time. We've got a lot of ministries you can work in. And then, so on the budget, you know, we've got Jeff, and we're just going to continue as is, again, unless God throws something on our lap, and then we'll just have to make it work and go to the congregation. But that doesn't preclude us to have financial conversations with the church before then, but, you know, we would have to do that. Okay. Just trying to summarize for my notes, so good.
Oh, so we're finalizing the Andrew decision a week from today at that meeting? We got congregational input coming. We let him know. We'll talk to him sometime that following week.
So my understanding is as of tonight, we are firmly behind Andrew unless something from the congregation is dreadfully wrong or in the background check. And because, again, back to what you said before is, you know, the elders should take the leadership on this. We need to have input from the congregation, and so we're going to get that. And then once that's in the background checks, right, then we approach Andrew and
so we could do
start formalizing things.
Now.
Yeah.
And ask for references now,
right,
this week.
Yeah. And we have references, so we just need to talk to them.
Okay. Finalized decision 616. And then, okay, good.
Hello?
Okay.
Hey. So that we,
no surprises. Okay.
Yes.
Good. Thank you. All right. Ministry relaunching discussion. Yes. And so Walker put out an email not terribly long ago, kind of, hey, we could use these ministry leaders. And Brett put out some cautions in plowing forward with unity and diversity. The Kelbleys have already been approached about leading that ministry, and there's some things in motion. And so now's the time to kind of,
okay,
that one and these others, ministry relaunching discussion. And so, Brad, I'm going to let you kind of carry that forward with your suggestions. You sent out an email today with kind of a template.
And hopefully you guys, you know, read through this. And this is, I don't know if you, I've got one copy. And again, you know, I've prayed a lot about this because I can be very Martha, and I can also, you know, be like Judas, and you know, why are we spending money on the oil for this man's feet? And so I have to check myself. But so I guess a couple things is, so one is I am uncomfortable with any of us approaching someone unilaterally to ask them to do something like to start a ministry or even to join the eldership or to sit in this group or whatever. I think that we should all kind of talk through that and say, here's what I'm planning to do. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it. And so I think, first of all, and I understand that it was all done for the best of reasons and intentions, but I just makes me uncomfortable if we act unilaterally. The other is, especially now, I think we should only do those things, you know, one, which we understand the purpose and the goals, and that, two, align with our current priorities and vision. And so there's a lot of things that we had been doing, but what of those things do we still think are relevant? And of those things, can we define them? And I think for some of the ministries, I can define them, but for unity and diversity, I cannot. I think like in one of these documents, it's kind of a Rorschach test. You know, it's whatever that person thinks it can be. So everybody's kind of got their things. And so my concern is, like, right now it's Pride Month, you know. That's a diverse issue, right? There's a lot of diversity in that. Now, if there was a unity and diversity billboard in our church, what would we say if there was a LGBTQ flag in it? Okay, that's not good. Now, what would we say if there were legislation in there that was strongly against LGBTQ? We would be strongly against that. Both of those, I think we would say that's not right. Now, somebody would say, you know, I've got opinions on both sides of this, right? So, or like it's Labor Day, and somebody puts a Chavez poster up there, and a United Auto Workers, you know, and or somebody puts their something about capitalism. It's like, well, you know, I think we would feel uncomfortable either way. Or if somebody put a George Floyd poster up there, right? I mean, all of these things are good things to talk about. But it took us 2 years to talk through LGBTQ, right? Because it's so sensitive. And I think to hand that off to somebody, and then they just make all those decisions, and we don't know how they're making decisions or what they consider to be something that's a diverse topic that we need to talk about. And so my concern is, in my head, there's 90% chance this will go badly. A 1% chance that it'll go well, and 9% chance that it's okay. Because it seems like right now, you know, we really haven't had this in several years that I'm aware of, and it seems to be going okay. Now, I think there's a lot of issues that we have to talk about, but I think that these are issues that require serious thought, you know, and discussion. It's not a trivial thing at all. And so my recommendation is, you know, one, for any ministry, what is it? You know, can we define it? Do we know what they're going to do? And the second is, for this one, being as sensitive as it is, can we abdicate our authority or our leadership in these areas to somebody else? And again, not knowing their understanding of how they would view all of these areas, right? So there's so many things that are divisive to so many people. You know, sometimes it's going to be, you know, vegetarianism versus corporate farming. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. It's like, well, which one are we going to get behind? So anyway, I'm talking a lot. It's a sensitive issue. I understand that. But I just am very concerned to start it up. And so my recommendation is to say to the Kelbleys, hey, we appreciate this. We need to think about it. We're not ready to move on it. That's my thought for this group.
Well, I'm 100% with you that it needs to be coming from the eldership as to what this ministry is. And the Kebleys would be the last people I would ask to handle that. I have a very simplistic thing that I would tell you that, you know, diversity is not DEI. Diversity is when you learn to love one another. And this whole thing, to me, is a joke. I mean, in terms of the white privilege and all that stuff, that when that drifts into this congregation, it's toxic. And we've let it, I think, go too far in certain ways that I'm uncomfortable with. I can tell you that when we were on that phone call with Collins, I thought we had a chance there, and then it went sideways when Gwen started crying and saying, but you don't understand our culture. And Collins was like, he said, I don't get it. Because he said, you know, he felt like he had been tortured in terms of being ridiculed because he wasn't sensitive to that. And it hurt him deeply. And the Bible tells us that if you don't love your brother or your sister, then you've got a problem. And that's the diversity, is the fact that we can be Asians or, you know, Filipinos or, you know, pick whatever culture you want, but there's only one body of Christ, and that is the calling. And when we start allowing culture to inculcate the church, it splits people. And I think it's happened here. And so when we say that diversity is one of our goals, yeah, you know, Jesus said, you got to love each other, and by your love, people will know that this is the truth. My approach is, if it's not in Scripture, you know, it's not to be taught here. And if you can't pull it out of the Bible, you know, you can talk about politics and all the other things that you're interested in with your friends, but when you come here, this is what we're going to be talking about and teaching people. And when you start having people saying, well, you know, you need to be re-educated to understanding our way of view, that's a problem. So
yeah, I hear you, Brad. And so, and it's a danger zone, so all agreement there. However, like Eric said in his recent sermon about feeding of the 5,000 and all, he touched on the need to listen to each other's stories. I think that's our obligation, is to hear each other.
I disagree.
That's what he said.
I know that he said
and
that.
And I thought it was well said.
Right.
And communicated this notion of, you know, walking a mile in your shoes would help me love you. Right. And I don't have to affirm and embrace your whole political perspective, but for me to tell somebody to just suck it up because that's the way it is and not listen to their stories type thing is what we want. That's loving. That's welcoming. That's hospitality, I think. And so I think a group that promotes that, hey, we're different and things are difficult, you know, but we're in this together. There's a right way to do that is in the Word, with neither Jew nor Greek, slave, free, male, female stuff. And the 12 apostles, look at this group of people that Jesus had walking right alongside him, and he kept them together.
So one of the things, right? One of the things, though, Dave, is people should be heard. And so a person should be heard for that person. The problem is the plural of anecdote is not data. So you can speak for you. You can't speak for a population. And so that's part of the problem is most of the times these people or these groups assume that they're speaking for a population. Now, that's when it gets problematic, is I can say that this is my experience, and that is true and right and good, and I need to hear that. But you can't say this is our experience, and you need to hear it this way. Now, that is where, you know, that just doesn't work, you know, because, again, the plural anecdote is not data. It's not supported, and it's, that is, I think, unhelpful. And you know, I think when I read Aaron Layton's book, that's one of the things that I don't agree with. And so, and I don't know how to deal with that because everybody has a story, right? And so the problem is, which stories do we listen to? So somebody can say, I was walking down to a baseball game, middle of the night, and a group of African-Americans jumped me and they mugged me. So my experience is, these people are bad. So I want to express that. Now, that's anecdote, but that is in no way supported by statistical data, and you can't assume from that you should make a statement about anything, except that, yeah, it's unfortunate what happened to you. And so I don't disagree with the concept that people have things they're dealing with. Everybody's got different things. But to talk about populations, that is a very tricky thing. So that's where I disagree with what Eric said in the sermon. I mean, I understand where he's coming from. It's just mathematically wrong. So,
I got to go, guys. I think this is obviously
right.
an issue we can't talk about in 20 minutes.
Right.
And I disagree mm-hmm. as well. I think the purpose originally for unity and diversity was just that we have a congregation and always have had a congregation that has been predominantly white.
Yeah.
And we, I think, have worked to try to be sure that there's nothing we're doing that is hindering us from expanding that to all kinds of people. And I don't think there was ever political agendas or anything involved. It was just, how can we better help people feel comfortable being a part of this congregation, no matter the color of their skin, their economic status, their whatever. And I think we try to read too much into it, and we do have to be careful, as you said. We don't want posters showing up or things like that, but I don't think by shutting down a ministry, we maybe need to put better...
Yeah. So I like what you're saying. It's just I would never have defined it that way. I mean, what you said, that I think that is great. But it's like I wouldn't have defined it that narrowly. So I think that's perfect what you're saying. If we can somehow put that in writing, or maybe the Kelbleys understand that. But
well, it's probably a good time to push the pause right. button, and we all get clearer on right. that. But I don't think we can just assume that it's not good to.
No, I think what you're saying is perfect. I think that's
because I think
great.
It is an important one of our values, you know, right. to say that, and to say that we are diverse. Well, we're getting there, but we're not. Somebody would still look at us as a very white congregation, you know, and very Anglo.
The whole thing, we're a white congregation, that is a marker of division.
Why is that, Brad? I mean, should we be?
I think that if you have a brother or sister, you know, I remember, you know, David Tao was like my best friend, you know, here. And I remember that time that we ended up at the filling station, his car broke down, and a guy, you know, threw him out of the, you know. And I was so angry, you know. But, you know, somebody said to me, you know, hey, Brad, you're a racist. I'm like, no, I'm not. I mean, it's like, you know, when you have, you know, foster children in your home, you're, you know, I feel like, God looks at the heart and not the skin color. And when we start defining ourselves as a white group, shouldn't be saying that. We should be saying we're a Christian group, and what we need to do is love one another, you know. And that is just, you know, but I know it's simplistic, but it comes right out of the heart of what, you know, we're taught here.
I don't think it's bad to say we're a congregation without many children and young families, and explore why is that about ourselves and what can we do to change. Now just take that identical motive and model and say we're a group without very many minorities. Now why is that? And do some self-exploration. It doesn't mean there's a bit of blame, but
well, I think you'd
asking
have to
ourselves.
I think you'd have to start first to say, is that a true statement? So first you'd have to say, what is the demographic for St. Louis, you know, or Missouri? And you know, like, so if you're
Rockville,
in, so
really?
Like, I'm going to go to Sweden, how diverse is it going to be? It's not going to be diverse. And so how are we compared to our demographic? And so I think first is, you know, are we out of line with our demographic or our community? You know, if our community is, so let's say Rock Hill is 50% black. Okay, we're out of line, right? So one of it is, but the first one is, though, I would say, and this is new to me, so unity and diversity is specifically race-related and specifically white African, not necessarily Latino or Asian. And so part of it was, I mean, there's a lot of things to be diverse about, like the LGBTQ thing, because even Walker mentioned that, you know, that'd be a hot button one. And so yeah, I think there's things that we could rally around, but I think we'd have to define it. And I could not, and I've taken a stab at it, but I think there are some things like what Don was saying, which sound good to me, but I don't know that I would have defined. I mean, I like how he defined it. I would not have, and I don't know if we went around the room if everyone would have defined it that same way. Yeah. And if the Kelbleys were, but that's the key thing is how would they define it? Because again, if you gave this ministry to Bruce Lohman, I know what he would say. We're divisive about, you know, we aren't reading the book of Enoch, right? Or if we gave this to certain people, it'd be, you know, we've got too many Republicans in here. We don't have enough Democrats. And so who you give the ministry to would define it greatly what it was going to look like unless we define it. So anyway, I didn't want to take a lot of time, but just to say, I think just given how heated it was tonight, you know, I think we just need to think about it. I'm just cautious about it.
I think you make a very good point that it's very timely that before we try to hand something off to the Cowboys, we really need to set them up for success or whatever that's going to look like.
Right. Well, historically, it was Lewis and Joyce that were running
elders,
with the elders. Right. And then Crider was also highly involved in it. And so you had that oversight of the leadership of the congregation.
That's a very good point.
That was running with it. So it could keep a little more control, keep it more focused towards what it needed to be. But as Lewis started to get sick,
right.
At that point they stepped back from that piece of it. I think even before he stepped away from the eldership. And so that ministry sort of fizzled at that point because he was running, I think, a lot of it even at the even later on. And then.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's where we have to realize that sometimes God lets things fizzle for reasons. I'm completely behind the idea that we need to be diverse, but I would never use the term unity and diversity because I feel that it's so political.
Loaded.
And it's just loaded so much that at work they told us that we have to do a DEI something. And I told my boss, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to take a part in it. I participate in all kinds of things. I will not, on my review, put anything on that. Doesn't matter what I've done. That's not what I'm doing. And I'm like, plus the president just said that we don't have that. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But because it's one of those things, it's so politically motivated that it's like, that's not what I'm about. We have to figure out a way to bring it in to where that's part of our life. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to go find, well, we have this many, our quota is to have 4 Mexicans or Hispanics, 10 blacks and this, so that we match our population. But we can't be a church that's pushing people away because they're a different ethnic. And I think that that's, the goal is to make everybody fit both ethnically as well as financially and whatever else we want to have in there, that we all feel that we're welcome here. And I think that's what's important when we're looking at all these ministries. And relaunching most of the ministries that are fizzled, I would almost say that looking at the whole, there are some of them that were on the list that I was like, but... sometimes it's probably better for us to, any of the ministries that are currently moving, we need to put a little extra effort to keep them moving, as opposed to saying, hey, let's try to get this one started today. And that, at least that was my thought when I saw the list. If Jeff didn't feel it was important for it to keep going as a full-time minister, our part-time person, we probably don't want to have him spending a lot of effort.
Yeah, I look at the men's ministry, and it's like, what a great idea, absolutely fizzled. But is that one of the reasons that our leadership pipeline is so weak?
Yeah.
Is that we don't have a robust men's ministry? And so I don't know that that's a one-on-one correlation, but it feels like a possibility. Mm-hmm. So what do we do with that?
Like the deep end.
So I think with this is, you know, one, I don't want to be a wet blanket, and I prayed a lot about this and went writing it up. And I'm just 1 of 6, and so, you know, shoot me down at any point. And there's some of these ministries I think, yeah, we need to pray about this. This looks important. But I don't think that they're all equal, like the beautification. You know, that's nice. But how does that relate to men's ministry? I think men's ministry, like to your point, is important. And again, it's like I've been praying about that, and I'm thinking, you know, in October, that's one of the things I want to work on. You know, maybe I'm not going to lead it up, but I'm convicted I need to start some discipleship groups with the men and things like that. So I'm hoping that there's ministries we can pray about and just, you know, really focus on those.
So is it fair that we take a chunk of our next meeting on the 16th and try to, I mean, since the Kelly meeting is the 25th, that does seem like the option of using the 616 meeting to try to create a clear provisional framework that ensures that group reflects what we're
well, I would say first, do we feel we need that group? I mean, have we missed it in the past 4 years? Or if we start it, are we only starting it because the Kelbleys got involved, or would we have started it otherwise?
Well, it's been less than 4 years since it's kind of dried up. I'd say since Lewis's health declined, right, stepping away. The Mayberries were hosting things at their home and showing discussion, you know, clips and things to discuss, and promoting reading certain books. Some folks travel together for different, you know, Black History Month events, things like that. The Kelbleys were part of that group, so it was my wife and I, Dale Simmons, Simpson and his wife, of course, the Walkers and the Wests and the Mayberries. And so, you know, the Kelbleys have that history,
right,
and we're well tuned in. And it's probably been a couple of years since very much has happened there. But
so I would guess, I would say
leaving was another big catalyst. They hosted a lot of those things at their home. And,
so I would say, if we can answer the first question, is it, do we feel it is a net positive? I mean, I'm sure that there's a one or two people that would enjoy it, but is it a net positive for the congregation? And if so, you know, then who would, should we have run it? And then the Kelbleys, you know, it seems like they're reasonable. And, you know, how do we outline it? But I think, you know, we'd have to answer first if we feel the majority of the six of us feel it's a, or the seven of us feel it's a net positive on the 16th.
So Steve's kind of summarized. And it'll be good for him to be here. Let's see. Identifying the circumstances that cause division, how do we build bridges to have meaningful conversations? Maybe a better way to construct the framework, but we should strongly consider giving freedom to ministry leaders. And
I think if the ministry doesn't end up at the feet of Jesus, it's not worth pursuing. And that's
fair.
I think I agree with you. I think Steve overstepped by assuming that he could go around and start appointing people.
And I understand where he did it, and I think we've all done it in different areas, you know, as far as like tapping people for asking about eldership and different things. But and he's tasked as an admin elder, and one of the things on the list is overseeing the ministries. Now, I think that was in his job description. Now, he may have assumed that that meant starting up and finding people, but I think that went beyond. So I think he overstepped, but I can understand why he did it.
Yeah, I approached Ben Maringer on Sunday about the pastoral ministry leadership need with Collins, and didn't offer it to him, but I picked his brain and explored his willingness so that I could bring that tonight.
Yeah.
And so, you know, simple as that. Just assuming that's one that's going to go forward.
Right.
And as opposed to stepping back to dissect that, so. Right.
But so I think that
next meeting we'll spend some time.
That these ministries, we should have ministries which are important to the church, and if they're important to the church, we should understand what they're supposed to be doing, and we should be all fully behind that ministry and supporting that ministry. And so I would say the first thing is we would ask the six of us or the seven of us, you know, if we however we define the ministry, is this something that we should do? I mean, right now, I've drafted up something I tried to come up with, but I'm struggling to come up with a good mission statement for it. And you know, what Steve has is vague, because it could be LGBTQ, it could be anything, right? And so I just don't know how to proceed with this, unless to say, if somebody wants to champion this, can they draft what it is that they think it is and present it to the leaders and to say, is this something that we want to do? And then if we do, who do we want to have lead it? That would be my recommendation.
And I've read through Steve's, I haven't read it word by word. And I really, the concept, if it's vague enough, so I think it needs to be a little bit more vague than it needs to be descriptive. Because if you get into it and you're very clear that this is about African-American, white and African-American relations, then that's definitely, I mean, that may be something that we don't really need to have as a group, especially if we're calling it Unity University. Because that needs to be a lot wider picture. But then you, like you said, you get into the other things of how the world sees these words, and that's where I struggle with them. Because the idea of diversity, I mean, historically, it goes back to Ketcher's side. He was one of the ones that championed this idea of unity and diversity, in that, but it was about churches, about the differences between the different church movements, and that they need to accept each other as believers in Jesus. It wasn't about black and white at all. And so it's sort of interesting how now churches are using this term that isn't, that's from a completely different methodology, because it's so close to the DEI movement, but it's not saying DEI. And that's where we have to be cautious to a point, and realize what we really want it to be and let it be that. Yeah. If it has its own name, that's perfectly fine.
That's where, if we use the Bible, you don't have this problem, period.
Here's what I drafted up, and I can't read it because I don't have my glasses on. But it's kind of what Jeff is getting at. So I don't know if you can read that.
This draft mission statement?
Yeah.
To foster Christ-centered unity within the body of Christ by building understanding and relationships across lines of background, culture, and experience, grounded in Scripture and guided by the Holy Spirit. Purpose: to explore how God's diverse creation reflects His image, to strengthen the unity of the church by listening well and loving one another, to identify and remove barriers to fellowship within the church family in ways that are biblical, nonpartisan, and spiritually constructive. Sounds pretty good so far. Boundaries and guidance. Discussions will be rooted in Scripture, not partisan politics or cultural ideologies. The goal is relationship and reconciliation, not advocacy or activism. Ministry leaders will work in coordination with the elders to ensure alignment with our church's values and teaching. Any resources, speakers, or events will be pre-approved by the elders to maintain theological and cultural sensitivity. Conversation should promote humility, grace, and peace, avoiding divisive or inflammatory rhetoric. And you got scriptural references for lots of these. What unity in diversity is not. It is not a platform for political expression, right or left. It's not an endorsement of every expression of diversity as defined by the culture. It is not a place to settle cultural debates, but to learn how to love across differences. It is a space for humble listening, thoughtful reflection, and Christ-like love.
So that's kind of like what Jeff was saying. It's kind of a general statement, but again, you have to be very judicious, I think, in how you carry that out and who you assign that to. But and again, there may be a better way to write it, but that's just one of the things.
I mean, I like that. It is a chance to reset and broaden, and it's got to be rooted across, you know. But I do think, I hate the thought of concluding that we don't need any impetus along these lines, because the natural tendency is homogenous, and
when God sends people here, we can not even realize how we're closing the door or elbowing them away or whatever. And realizing what does that is eye-opening and Christ-like. You know, he could see through the surface stuff. And so I think an awareness of that. Now, the Kelbleys have on their heart, you know, prison ministry type of, you know, second chances and stuff like that. And so there's a new flavor that this group could appropriately, you know, and not try to be everything, but, you know, and so we're making really good points and the timing's really good to do that. So I appreciate that. And so, and I like what you had there. If you wouldn't mind sending that to us, so Steve and Steve can see it before next week as well.
I will, yeah.
And we'll have it as an agenda item.
Okay. And about Jeff and I will both be gone, so you can just, you know, continue on and,
okay,
you know, whatever you guys do, I trust you guys, so.
Okay. And, yeah, it's probably not a 20-minute discussion next week either.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be 5 minutes, but yeah.
But with the 25th, I mean, there's nothing wrong. Alan, they both just retired May and June. And so my cringe wasn't, oh, it's the Cowboys for this purpose.
Yeah.
Amy and I are very close to them. And my cringe was, oh, man, we're dumping on them right out of the box here.
Yeah.
Of course, now when Brett retires here in 2 months.
That's right, I'll have time. Yeah.
He's wide open. So.
Yeah.
No.
I want to be in your group, Brett.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Okay. I'd like that.
So anyway, and just another thought is I was trying to get Jeff Kreider to come to one of these June meetings for an update on how he's doing, as well as the things he's working on. And he would love to give us an update on a leadership development group, small group. Greg Walton and Chris Fuller and a couple other names I can't think of. He's pulling together, and so that's nice. And so maybe it'll be July before he's not available tonight or next Monday. So anyway, just know that's happening right along similar lines of what you're describing.
I like that. And I also, you know, I talked with Jeff occasionally and casually, and he has been great, just stepping aside, but he's indicated that he's willing to do whatever and as much as we're willing to allow. And so that's why I just said, hey, you know, as elders, what do we want to do? I mean, is he ready to sit on an elders meetings, or is he ready to sit in once a quarter on elders meetings, or get engaged with things? So anyway, I just wanted to, what do we want to do with him? And I just think he's a resource that I think he needs to be, he can't be given free rein. You know, with Andrew and everything, you know, he's got to be reined in, and he's got a strong personality, but I think he is a great man that we should take advantage of whenever we're ready, because he's ready.
He is a very gifted member in a lot of ways, and I just over and over, the recent retirees that I talk to, it takes them a while to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
My wife included. Who's 2 years in and, you know, pretty settled now, but it just, you know, just that whole, and that just comes up over and over. And so I really want to, of course, we're coming up on a year now, aren't we? So, okay, it's a good time to ask that question. And I don't want to rush into inviting him into this group as a potential future elder. I think that might be down the road even further, but in terms of my own thoughts about that. But yeah, I guess we are coming up on a year, so.
I want to be really careful with Andrew that he's not threatened by Jeff.
Agree.
And I do have concern that Jeff will want to take him under his arm and teach him everything, and that could be a problem.
You end up with the same person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, with what you're saying, we at this table have the same thing. You know, I've heard, you know, Steve Autry's eager to spend a lot of time with him, right? And it's like, well, is that good or bad? you know, and like Nathan won't spend a lot of time with him. Well, is that good or bad? You know, it's like, well, you know, I think it could be either way, right? So, you know, I think we all just need to watch it from all of us.
Take is that we let Jeff have the reins and he did everything.
Right.
And that was a mistake.
Agree, right.
So I am hoping that this group will be centered better in a position where, like you said, no one of us can go out there and just start doing something without the others knowing what's going on. And I think that's critically important. And Jeff, I mean, just what happened with Collins, I mean, Jeff's not malicious, but he'll start bringing that stuff in, and I don't want to see it happen again.
Right.
So, I mean, I play golf with him regularly, and we talk a lot.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
You know, I love Jeff, but he's got his problems.
So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up, and I just a resource, and so at some future time.
All right. I put down a couple of ministry leaders that need replacements, and so let's just kind of confirm: is that an accurate statement, or do these ministries need to undergo the same relaunching thought? Pastoral ministry and connect group ministry.
I think pastoral, yes. Connect group, I'm on the fence. I don't know. I think pastoral, we need that ministry and a leader. If we can't lead it from the eldership, I think we need to find somebody for the interim.
I felt like setting that group up has been really good, and I've been pleasantly surprised at the number of folks that have been involved in it. Now, I'm not keeping up with how involved everybody's been, but I know Ben's been very consistent. That's why I approached him. And
he's sort of co-leading, I think, with Collins.
Yeah, and his reply was, hey, he said, well, what are you guys really after? And I said, well, really, somebody to just kind of know who's getting visited and where the gaps are, and then an encourager to those folks that are doing that. You know, and so kind of outlined it, and he said, well, he could do that and would love a list of who we see as the folks on that list, and then the volunteers he's aware of, having them kind of check in and let him know. But then when we freelance and visit people, is there a good mechanism to let him know that too? And that was just some of the brainstorming. So anyway, his envision was, you know, he could step into some role with that, and then would love to.
On the staff side of it, so just so you guys are aware, I don't know how much you know about it, but so Caitlin sort of oversees to make sure that things are moving from one person, Collins, to everybody else.
Good.
So there's a chat or something, I don't know what they have, but so she keeps track of a lot of that. Not as a, like, she doesn't really participate in it most of the time. She just knows that somebody's looking into it. So usually somebody from the group. So, and he probably knows that Caitlin has that, because she's, a lot of times, will send messages to people, too, for Collins, historically.
Okay.
So we definitely want to make sure that she is aware of how things are flowing, and make sure Ben knows that.
So did Collins kind of tell her, hey, email so-and-so and encourage them to visit Tom Holmes or something?
It's possible. I don't know how it all worked. I think they had a chat, like some kind of group me or some kind of thing that they would send it back and forth to each other. And so she kept track of it. And if somebody called in the office or somebody sent an email in, then she would send it out to the group, sort of like a splash message. And I don't know if it was email or if it was via a chat message or something. But so there's something going on. So I can ask her tomorrow if you want me to.
Yeah,
well, she won't be there tomorrow.
Sure.
Yeah, so we just need to figure out. And I know Walker is on the message group as well.
I'm thinking more along the line that this is an opportunity with a new person coming in that maybe we look at everything, you know, we may keep things and we may change things, but I think we ought to look at everything.
Yeah.
I think this is an opportunity.
Yeah, and it's a sort of a good timing too, because during the summer, small groups, like mine and Brett's, is probably the only one that's really active, mm-hmm. because the teens are still here. And so, but most of the others take a break during the summer. So we still have, 3 months, let's say, before the small group, the Connect group, really needs to sort of kick off. A week or two before that, they need to figure out what they're going to do and send out messages. But
next week is June 15th. I mean,
we're getting close.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast
the summer is just going to fly, especially for Jeff and I with our trip. So,
I think kind of taking a step back and especially bringing on a new person. I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, and I had said that before, that I can definitely help out with the small group piece of it. I mean, I ran it for Mid-County in the late days of it. Jeff and I did.
Well, we just got to hurry up, make you an elder. Yeah.
You'll be done with it. So, at least some of those things that, I mean, it's... Because the thing is that I do a lot of getting information out as children's minister, too. So it's just adding that extra little piece of saying, hey, send out an email or add this to the bulletin.
Yeah.
And then getting papers out in front of people. And so, I mean, that's something
I think bringing Andrew in and asking his opinion would be wonderful.
Yeah, and even if he's not even on staff at that point, we could have those conversations and say, what are your ideas?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Even before he comes on, just get those connections
once he's
going.
Made the agreement that he's going to be here.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Upcoming class schedule. Brett thought it would be a good idea to take a minute and just make sure we're all aware of what's coming.
Well, and hopefully, let's see how quickly I can do this. So, 18th century clipper ships. Should we have a class on that? So it's very interesting, but so
I don't know.
So my thought is, I went through the list, and I think I know where these are going. So one is finances. That's a good community college class, like 18th century clipper ships. But I think that the finances is like Dave Ramsey. It's how can you honor God with everything you are, especially your money, because it's talked about a lot. So financial, it's not just finances, it's how does that relate to your spirit. Now, the other was Enneagrams. And personality testing. It's like, well, again, that's like 18th century clipper ships. That's interesting, but I don't know what the connection is to what we're trying to do with that. Now, again, it may be in there. So I'm just asking, is this like a class on your personality and how you need to learn to relate with other people so you can, share your faith and things like that, which sounds great. But, one, I don't believe that the Enneagram has much merit. Even beyond that, it's just what are we trying to do with that class? And so, again, it's like 18th century clipper ships.
So the topic, just so that we're completely in the know, so parables and the Enneagram.
Okay.
So it's based on a book. So in the little thing, it says, no matter what your personality type, Jesus' parables can help you be awake and aware of special challenges and unique gifts. They show the reader how Jesus used parables to teach people who listened but could not hear, who saw but could not understand. Okay. So that's the book that he's basing upon the class upon. He's been doing it with CFS, like in their devotionals, and so it's just really taking it from what he's been doing with CFS and bringing it over here and using it on a Sunday. So it's really, it's based in connection with Enneagram, but not necessarily the Enneagram class that he taught before, which was very loosely based on biblical things, where this one would be probably a little more biblical verses.
And that's good. I don't need a whole lot of detail, but just reading through that list that you provided earlier, it's like, well, it sounds like an interesting class, but in the same way that 18th century clipper ships is an interesting class, and I'm not really sure what we were trying to get across. So what you explained, that's helpful to me. So I just want to make sure that we as elders know what it is that we're going to be about with these classes. So that's all I wanted to say.
So Romans, that Don's going to do, is pretty straightforward, right. Very text-driven. Mm-hmm. Becoming the Gospel, Jeff Fogarty.
Yeah, right.
Sounds quite good. You want to flesh that out?
And that's
a
title of a
well.
Book, right?
Yeah, it's...
I'm sorry?
That's a title of a book.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's... Yeah, Michael Gorman's book, and it has... It's looking at Paul's letters and the discipline of missional hermeneutics, so that we're all about taking the gospel to people all the time and how that has an impact. So the hermeneutics is that the usefulness of what is in the scripture. So, and so taking the mission or the gospel to people around us based on Paul's letters. And the co-title is Paul, Participation, Mission. So Becoming the Gospel, Paul, Participation, Mission is the book's title. So yeah, definitely, it'll be based. So you have Eric that's hitting the Gospels or the parables. Jeff then would be hitting the Paul's letters and Paul's Acts okay. missional piece.
I appreciate that. That is helpful to with all these. Okay. So have to rework timing on that financial stewardship.
Yeah. And we can figure out something else. We had a couple others that we could have thrown in there too. So,
I say, Dave, I'm happy to help out while you're down any way I can for you to, you know, I can certainly teach, I think, on financial stuff too, that if that's what, you know, people are asking for.
I think it's what they need.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're asking for it or not, but I think there's definitely a need.
Yeah. So, well, I was going to use the summer to start working on that, a couple of months, you know, and then I thought, well, I'm going to miss 2 months out of basically three and a half, and so better to put it off, and then that gives me the summer to prioritize other things before surgery, quite frankly.
Yes. Yeah.
So better for me to not push for that topic.
Yeah,
and my involvement in it this fall.
And I'm trying to remember what,
but
I thought that Eric had even said that the other time frame may have been better for him too. So it may be that you guys could switch, but I'll have to look at that. There was something that Betty had told me the other day, but I don't remember what it was.
Okay.
But it was before you telling her, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it was something else that had.
Yeah, she had asked me once if there was, you know, the best timing for that. You know,
at that point, it was, didn't
matter.
Yeah. And so, it is where it is. So, so thank you, Brad, because that was mid-August to mid-December.
It worked for a while.
We'll need some, some interrupted time. So, anyway. All right. We are not going to review the situational questions that were in from the elders' retreat, but I don't want to let go of that because I really think those are just some very practical, what's the next step, you know, and where is our body, what, you know, the lesbian couple comes in and wants them to bring their kids, all that is, how do we help navigate, or what do we think, would they be shunned, would they be embraced, whatever, and so, and then there's just a whole laundry list of that stuff.
Yeah.
There were some good questions, like they had if two men were holding hands or hugging in church, and what we would probably have two women that would want to do that. So I mean, those are practical questions. How what's our response? And, you know, those kinds of things. So yeah, I think it's something that we should keep looking through those. And I'll put that list in our notes. And,
So anyway, I'll send those questions out again
before
the next meeting and mull those over. Let's see. Sunday, I'm going to be gone this coming Sunday. I'm traveling to Indiana to see my dad for Father's Day weekend.
Yeah, okay.
And so, Brad, if you wouldn't mind signing checks if you're going to be here.
No problem.
Be great.
Who's preaching this Sunday? Do you know?
I've really lost track of the sequence.
Yeah, it was flipping around for a while.
That's one thing I'd love to have is a calendar with, you know, who's doing what and when, and, you know, and I hope we can.
Well, we thought it might be Devin because there was flexibility. Yeah. It sounds like this one might be.
And I've got it in our notes. Yeah, I've got it in our notes, but I don't have my notes in front of me.
This might have been the one for Katie.
Oh, it was, yes. Yeah, so originally that's who it was.
So
this is what, Sunday the 15th?
Still on.
So we have, what? That's on. Chris Fuller. Fuller.
Okay.
Yeah, because he was going to talk on Father's Day.
Okay.
Because both his father was sort of the stepfather, I think.
Well,
and he has sort of been the stepfather for Abby.
Yeah.
And so it's been very interesting as somebody that never really had a father and to come into the situation where the daughter is sort of, her father has just left her. And so it's been,
okay.
So he's preaching this Sunday or something like that. If that's what I'm remembering, this is the conversation I had with Steve about it.
All right. 8:10. Anything else urgent that you guys came in with?
And then the week after is Melanie. So
Chris Fuller, Melanie.
If that's going to work still with Melanie.
It will. So she'll be back. As far as I know, she is.
Okay, good.
And then that was, she had told me, or somebody told me, that she was still planning to do it. And then Nathan is the week after, so the 29th. And then Jeff Fogarty is the 6th. And that's the last one that's out here. Oh, and that's the week that, yeah, so that's the week that he says he has it up until. He had said that on the call yesterday. So maybe I'll say Andrew could start on the 7th. Or the 7th.
That would be great.
All right. If you wouldn't mind.
Father, while we're small in number, we believe that your spirit is working.
Yes.
And we're seeing the results of prayers that we've answered previously for the past year.
Mm-hmm.
We pray that we are on the track that you want us to be on. I pray for wisdom and for transparency that will create revival.
Yeah, amen.
I ask, Father, that you will send us workers who wish to work in the kingdom. I pray for things that we cannot see that you have already created before the foundations of the earth were ever created. Help us to discover where those are. We love you, Lord.
Yes.
In Jesus' name we ask. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, brothers. So, Dave, are you shook up about the surgery, or is it?
I was. That day we talked to the surgeon because I was really, I mean, I hadn't had symptoms and I really felt like it was going to be remote that he'd have to go in again.
Right.
Okay, he has to do something to the valve, to go up through a vein and get to it, put a clip on something. Or those solutions are for folks that really can't tolerate surgery and it buys them a year or a few.
So they're going to have to go through the sternum?
This one, he's like, I'm young enough, healthy enough. He's, after a decade's solution for me, and that would be replacing the valve.
Mm-hmm.
That was daunting. It's not what I wanted to hear. And so, I mean, I grieved that news. And, they've been processing. And, do we need a second opinion? Last time we got a second opinion and it was very affirming and we went with this surgeon and I don't want to waste another surgeon's time just to let me go with this one like I think makes sense to do. He's so experienced and what he did didn't work, but that's, I really don't think partially that's his
worked.
Fault.
Well, I thought what he did worked, it just failed somewhere else, right?
Well, yeah, that same valve.
Okay.
But
okay, I gotcha.
This was the portion of it that we repaired that was the real problem, and
And after surgery, it was no regurgitation. It was really good. And then, you know, you get a 6-month evaluation, everything's fine. Then 1 year, and okay, something's happening. And so anyway, it's been sobering, and just the, you know, it's like I'm facing death again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, got through that so well the first time. It's like, are we really going to do this again? Well, statistically, you know, there's about a 3% chance that on the operating room, you know, and especially for me, that holds up. And so that's, you know, for 20 years difference in quality of life, that 3% is worth it again.
Yeah. So Larry Franke,
it just takes a while to get there.
Yeah, I don't know if you talked to Larry Franke. So this past Sunday, we were invited him over to the house, and I got a funeral to go to. A friend of mine was getting a colonoscopy, and he coded. And it's like, it's one of these things, it's like, you know, you just never know. So like 3%, that's small. You just never know. So I'm hopefully it's
so
really good.
Then you hear about, you know, Leon's mother.
Yeah.
Surgery, heart attack in the ICU. It's might not be directly related to the surgery.
Yeah, so it could be, you know, heart surgery or colonoscopy. You know, that 3%, I think, is there. So.
And so then I'm talking to my boss, letting her know about what's coming, and I don't know timing yet. Her mother had, was a smoker all her life, had 2 open-heart surgeries as well as all kinds of procedures. Yeah. And that's making me feel like, well, if she can get
it.
I'm getting both sides of this.
Has your watch noticed any AFib or anything squirrely with your heart rhythm or anything? Okay. No.
And that's good.
Right.
And so I know what to expect. It's just, it's still, you know, just really sobering. And, you know.
So you think early August, maybe?
I'm going to push, I think, for early September.
That was September, okay.
He suggested mid-August. Yeah. The surgeon did. Mm-hmm. Two months away. And it's like, well,
it's only 2 months
September
away.
Might be a little better, as long as he's going to be in town and everything. So. And then, anyway, that's all.
You're going to miss the small group launch. You're going to miss the new Connect group launch. Relaunch.
So, yeah. And so it is, you know, it's sobering, but there are blessings to count, too. I had another tooth flaring up, and that's a red flag, oral bacteria with the heart. And it's like, okay, found that early, had a tooth pulled, which not what you want to go through either. But and then they had to send me to an oral surgeon again. Mm-hmm. Last 2 teeth I've had to have pulled. Takes an oral surgeon to do it, but then wow, these people know what they're doing, and I feel like I've gotten really good care, and so there's lots of blessings to count with that. So I don't know,
I had a tooth pulled once. Went to a regular dentist, and I mean, he's in there banging away. It's on an upper tooth.
Uh-huh.
I'm in the chair for like an hour, and he, you know, it's just pulling out bits, and he said, I don't know if I got it all. And I'm just looking at him, and he said, and I was, because it's your upper tooth, it may travel up in your sinus, or it may go in, you know, further up in your brain. So if you have any problems, you know, you need to call this number. It's like, doctor, what? I don't want to hear this.
Your oral surgeon told me the same thing.
Oh, he did?
Said, that root, she said, perforated your sinus.
Oh.
So they put a little membrane in there and stitched it in, but told me.
Yeah, because I was at a regular dentist.
If you sees blood.
Yeah, he was just banging away. It's like, doc, I don't want to hear that. It's like, you know, who are you?
Exactly.
You know? Well, good luck.
Just like a chiropractor.
Made anesthesia, you know. So
oh, yeah.
You
know.
Just do it and I'll be done.
Yeah. So.